Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the Bald Face Truth.
I'm hopeful that college football is going to be happening on time, as we all know it, at least on the field. And a piece of that at the University of Oregon is Joe Moorhead, the offensive coordinator. He's joining us now. What's your morning like? What's like a Thursday morning like for Joe Moorhead?
Well, Thursday's been like Wednesday and Tuesday and Monday and Sunday throughout this whole thing. So I'm actually just we got into Oregon about a week ago. So I'm sitting on my porch now, kind of getting all the boxes unpacked and things settled in. So it's kind of wash, rinse, repeat in a Groundhog Day sort of sense.
Do you like moving?
Do I like moving? No, not particularly. Not at all.
I hate moving.
My wife is type A. She's been phenomenal, and she's an organizer. She's a list person, so she kind of took care of and takes care of all those things. And we actually bought an RV and made a trek cross country, to get out of here. So that was kind of fun, but moving's not fun.
The loss of spring football, or maybe having a super abbreviated spring football, I wondered how it would affect particularly you and the quarterback group that you have, and mm-hmm. Wanting to get in and get your feet on the ground. I'm sure. Have you been able to make up some of that with Zoom meetings and talking with kids, or how challenging was that?
Incredibly challenging in the sense that you don't have the on-field application of the things that you learn in the classroom. And I think one of the positives of what we've been able to do in coaches' schedule is we went back as a position group individually through all of the spring installs, and we're really able to dive into the specifics and details of each play at a much slower pace, rather than going through a meeting to get ready to get on the field. So, that's been one of the benefits that we were able to go through, teach methodically, teach slowly, teach for understanding, and, really sort of the things that we installed in the spring that we covered a second time through.
Personnel-wise, you've got a transfer in Anthony Brown, you've got Tyler Shuck who's coming back. Is it challenging to you as well to get an idea of what personnel, or do you look at film of these guys and say, okay, what are their skill sets?
Yeah, that's probably the most difficult part, but you really felt like you were getting a pretty good grasp of what the guys can do through the full practices, and obviously went back and watched every snap from last year and, had seen Anthony on tape in our preparation for the Music City Bowl last year, and then, watched all his snaps, that we pulled off of film. So, he'll be the one you've seen what he can do, and he's got a body of work at the collegiate level as a successful Power 5 quarterback, but now it's just, seeing him do it in person.
I know once upon a time we all believed you got to have a starter, and that is a question I think that comes up a lot when you've got, a guy like Justin Herbert who leaves and you got a bunch of people vying for the position. How healthy is it in your mindset to have a room where you got two or three candidates and you got a competition and it's not just one guy in the room versus maybe when you do have a known quantity coming back?
Yeah, that's good. That's a very good observation. And I think it's not just at the quarterback position, but anywhere on the offensive side of the ball or the whole team. I think competition is going to make everybody better. And it is very, very analogous to when I stepped in at Penn State and Christian Hackenberg had set a bunch of records and was prepared to become a high draft pick. And you had Trace and Tommy in the room and a couple other guys behind them. And, it was just, every single meeting, every single weight room, every single practice, those guys were fighting tooth and nail for the job just because they knew if there was, I don't want to say one slip up, but they knew that they were, working to earn a job and a position, and they were being judged by their body of work.
Now it's you're going to enjoy the best time of year in Oregon here. Your family's going to get this summer, and everybody's going to say the summers are the greatest thing, and it's true. You're going to see kids out playing and long days, and it's beautiful, and everything's green, but you got work to do too. Like how much? What is the balance for Joe Moorhead? Like between film, practice, preparing, moving, and still being a dad and a husband.
I think this is probably unprecedented in its scope and magnitude. That generally you go through June and you get to work with your players a little bit. You get to have your summer camps. You kind of do opponent preparation and you watch the spring ball cutups. And now all that's gone by the wayside. So, we're getting a little bit of a downtime in June. And then for the proposed schedule for the upcoming fall, it looks like July will be more of a work month than it has been in the past. So it'll be a period of adjustment for all of us. But at the end of the day, to me, the better husband you are and the better father you are, the better coach you are. So it's about time management. It's a 3 technique at 6 a.m., a 3 technique at noon, and a 3 technique at midnight. So it's not about spending time. It's investing it. And I think under the leadership and direction of Coach Cristobal, who sets a phenomenal culture, that we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We're just trying to make sure it runs incredibly smoothly and efficiently.
Two of my 3 daughters recently had birthdays, and it was really cool as I saw their friends drive by the house and hold up signs. And I saw a few weeks ago on your Twitter feed your kids' baseball team in Starkville who came by because they weren't going to get a chance in person to say goodbye. And they sort of drove around in balloons and hung out the windows. What'd that mean to you guys?
Yeah, I mean, my wife, we got really choked up about that. And, we had met a lot of really good people there and made a lot of good friends and a ton of good memories, on and off the field. And, spent a lot of time with those kids and their parents at, travel games, little league games. And, we qualified for the little league regional and made a trip to Waco and got on the Mississippi State bus. And, I mean, toured Baylor's facilities and Matt Rule was fortunate to do that. But to have them come by, I mean, it just it meant a lot because they're really, really good people. And it just meant a lot to our family, my son in particular.
What are you like as a fan at your kids' game? Are you able to relax or are you living it on the edge of your seat?
For baseball, usually the really only time I'm kind of, I don't say on edge, but it was when he's pitching because I was a pitcher too. So, and my daughter played softball and she pitched as well. So usually where you're going to find me is a spot with the best shade in my fold out chair. And then it's a time where you got to kind of, I want to say question, should have run them, should have pitched them here, should have done this, but ball strike, pretty laid back unless he's pitching. Then the competitive part kicks in a little bit.
At Fordham, you played quarterback at Fordham, and then you went overseas to play professionally. The favorite class you had in college, is there a class you look back on and you go, I still carry that with me today? New questions.
I'd say any one of my English. Any one of my English classes. I mean, as an English major, I mean, kind of the Jesuit model. They teach you, escape my mind right now, think critically, communicate clearly, and you get the kind of foundation of learning where you're taking a little bit of everything. But I'd probably say any one of my English classes, and I thought not necessarily a major where my parents looked at it and said, what are you going to do with this? But I think any one of those classes probably was.
I was also an English major, and I loved reading. I loved writing, of course, and I had a hard time with poetry, but I love short stories. What did you like growing up? What'd you read?
I read a bunch of Stephen King stuff.
Yeah,
just about all his stuff. I read to a certain point, probably getting into college.
Scares me.
Bachman books. I mean, all of those.
Joe Moorhead with us, Oregon Ducks offensive coordinator. Everybody's going to ask you, what are you guys going to look like on offense? I know you got a left tackle as the Outland Trophy winner, and I know that you guys are going to be physical. What do you say when people say, Coach Joe, what are we going to look like on offense?
I'd say balanced, explosive, and efficient. And I think if you can tie all three of those things together, you're going to have a pretty – and at the end of the day, offensive football is about scoring points. So the thing you want to do successfully, talk about being in the top 15 in the country and top three in the conference in points per game, and then kind of below that you want to talk about rushing average, passing average, turnover margin, touchdown percentage in the red zone. But at the end of the day, it's a line of scrimmage game. And, you got to win that thing up front. And the great teams and championship teams I've been around have been ones who've been able to dominate the line of scrimmage. And that's where the mentality starts. And, we're going to be a team that's going to run the ball successfully and force people to commit numbers to the box by either support or by pressure. And that gives us one-on-one matchups on the outside. And, we've shown over the years that we're willing and capable to throw the ball down the field.
Your favorite part of coaching, is it teaching, working with kids? Is it film work? Is it game day? When are your juices really flowing?
Honestly, it's the relationships with the players. And you go back and, heck, I've, 21 years, four conference championships, coaches. I mean, all those things are great. But at the end of the day, when you're still getting texts and phone calls and congratulations from kids all the way back to when you were a GA at Pitt or Georgetown or Akron or UConn and Fordham and Mississippi, and you're still hearing from all those kids, and not just the ones, the Saquons and the Traces and the ones that are still on the tips of everyone's tongue because they're major stars in the NFL, but guys who've gone on to be great husbands, great fathers, great businessmen, and they want to call and thank you for all the lessons that you've taught them. Because at the end of the day, I mean, it's as much about mentorship as it is about wins and losses. It's not about what are the kids doing for us between the white lines on Saturday, but what are we doing to help them, become great people. And to me, that's I love the competitive part of it. I love the game plan. And I love the X's and O's, the locker room, the Saturday afternoons and Saturday nights. But to me, this is a game about the kids and the players and those relationships.
Yeah, and I don't think enough gets made of that because, we all focus on game day and what this season is, and then players move through, and the vast majority of these guys don't go on to be stars in the NFL. They just hopefully become, fathers and dads and productive people. And over the years, do you just have players from all stops, who reach back out to you and from Akron and UConn and Fordham and Penn State and, what's your phone look like when you get a job? Like, you must be getting texts from all over the country.
More than you believe. And that's because, in the recruit process, it's about developing, real relationships, not surface ones that end the day that the pads get hung up and the cheering stops. But I mean, I hear from kids from everywhere I've been, whether it's, Twitter, DM or text. And I think that's because you have to show a genuine care for your players. And people say, you got to coach them hard, and you got to do this, and you got to do that. Now, you got to do all those things, but at the same time, it's not soft to teach your kids, that you love them, that you care about them, that you want to teach them the right things to do on and off the field. And I think when you develop those things through the recruiting process, you don't change as a coach during their time on campus. And then, when they need a helping hand or they need, something done for them once the eligibility is exhausted. There were times at Mississippi State when we were on the road and we were at home, and there were 10, 15 kids from Fordham who made a road trip down, that's as gratifying as any win or loss. I mean, we're unpacking boxes now, and I see my championship rings, I see the helmets, I see the plaques, I see the coaches, and all those things are great, but they gather dust, they fade away, they end up in boxes. All the other things in real life.
I had a stretch where in like 8 years I moved 5 times moving newspapers in, and I was moving boxes. I didn't even know what was in the box. It just had a bunch of stickers on it. Do you have boxes like that?
Well, we have combinations. So that we have the cardboard boxes, which we had to just throw away the other day, then we have they are Rubbermaid, I guess what they are.
Yeah.
Now you're taking a Sharpie and you're scratching out what it was. Saying what's in there now and what room you wanted to. And the ironic part about it right now is you kind of get my office set up at the house and we find a bunch of things. The only thing I can't find right now are my dang bowl rings. So we got an APB out on those. So hopefully they're in one of the boxes that my daughter has in her place.
All right, you're on the western part of the United States, but you're a guy who was born in Pittsburgh and you went to college in New York, and you've coached in a lot of places, but most of them east of the Mississippi. What do you want to do when you're out here as a family? Because you got an opportunity here with some time before you guys really get cranking. Is there anything you want to see or do on the West Coast, or anything the kids and you or and the wife are going to go do?
I tell you, the last leg of the drive into Oregon was along the river, kind of in between the mountains there, which was beautiful. So my wife has mentioned Crater Lake, and I haven't had enough time to kind of research it. So I think that's something she wants to do. Saw when Coach Maribor was at that place that had the real blue water. She wants to kind of do that hike.
Yep.
So and now with the social distancing and kind of the limitations of things you're able to do, I mean, this will be my first year in 46 years I haven't been to Kennywood Park in Pittsburgh. I mean, we've gone back every summer since we've been together, so that's kind of put the kibosh on that. So we're going to have to figure out something to do here in this place.
All right, Joe Moorhead, I appreciate you. I thank you for making time. Excited to see what you guys do, and welcome to the state of Oregon, and welcome to your family.
I appreciate you, man. Great day. Thanks for having me on.
All right, there's Joe Moorhead, Oregon's offensive coordinator. I'm excited to see what they're going to look like. I'm excited, of course, to see what the group of quarterbacks are going to be. But I think Oregon's identity is completely and wholly wrapped up in that offensive line and left tackle, Penei Sewell. And I think Joe Moorhead's got probably has a head coaching job in his future again. He's been a head coach twice in college football. I think this is going to be a nice stepping stone for him, maybe to somewhere else in the Pac-12. Maybe he'll fall in love, like a lot of people do when they move to the state of Oregon. You got the bald-faced truth. Leave it here. I loved having Joe Moorhead on the show. We got Dennis Dodd coming up, CBS Sports. He is the college football columnist. We'll talk to Dennis Dodd about all things college football related coming up here in a few minutes. I want to kick around the Moorhead interview. And by the way, tomorrow on the show, Brian Lindgren, the Oregon State offensive coordinator. I say all the time, this radio show is not home of the Ducks. It's not home of the Beavers. It's home of the truth. I really mean that. I really would cringe at the idea of being the home of one or the other when you have two college football teams in this state and two programs that deserve the attention that I would love to give them. And I've always done that, but I just feel unencumbered right now by any kind of pressure to focus on Ducks or focus on Beavers. I'm going to focus on what matters. That's why I'm having both coordinators on the show. I think they both matter. There have been times, I think, where you could argue that different sports teams in the state weren't as relevant as others. I think we're in a rare time right now where Oregon State is trying to get to bowl eligibility, and it's going to be huge if they can get there. It'll be huge for their bottom line. It'll be huge for their brand. It'll be huge for recruiting. And they flirted with it last year. I think they came within, the 1 yard line at Washington State, or maybe they shouldn't have done the trick play fake punt at Hawaii. You get one of those games, and I think it's a very different narrative for Jonathan Smith, who would have been bowl eligible, just a year and a half or 2 years after Gary Anderson bolted on the program. So Oregon State matters big time to me. And Nick Daschle of the Oregonian had a great piece on Trevon Bradford, who is going to be a playmaker that Brian Lindgren's going to count on. Meanwhile, you got Joe Moorhead at Oregon, who was brought in after, essentially being fired at Mississippi State. He's brought in by Oregon and then is given the opportunity to lead this offense that a lot of us were frustrated by a year ago. It may prove that Marcus Arroyo laughs last. It may prove that all along we were criticizing Marcus Arroyo for being conservative and not utilizing Justin Herbert in a way that a top two quarterback in the draft might have been utilized. It may turn out that it was Mario Cristobal who was saying, hey, we need to run the ball. Herbert needs to be a big piece of this offense, but not the offense. It's not the identity I'm recruiting to. It's not the identity that I want to have on the field. It may prove to be true. You know, maybe we'll watch UNLV play under Marcus Arroyo, and they will throw the football around the stadium, and we'll all go, what the heck happened? What got into him? It might prove to be that way. But I remain hopeful that Joe Moorhead is one of the missing pieces that Mario Cristobal needed on his coaching staff. I think Andy Avalos is fantastic as a defensive coordinator. I think Oregon's going to lose Avalos within a year, maybe 2 years, to a head coaching position, unless they just back up the truck and make Andy happy. I think Joe Moorhead fits that timeline as well. And it's why I have stepped up. You know, you have analysts in the stock market world who look at indicators in the market, and they'll tell you, I'm issuing a buy rating right now for Amazon, or I'm issuing a hold rating for Apple, or I've raised my target price on a certain stock. I'm raising my target price on Oregon's arrival to the college football playoff for a couple of reasons. One, the window in the Pac-12 has opened. It's Washington trying to get its feet under it with Jimmy Lake. It's Utah and Kyle Whittingham, who gave the conference their best punch last season, and it didn't connect. Utah was tremendously talented, especially on the defensive side of the ball, and just couldn't get by Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game. Got run off the field. I looked at that Pac-12 championship game. I looked at the way Oregon physically played against Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl. I look at USC trying to get back, but under Clay Helton. UCLA is down. Stanford is not what it was in the Andrew Luck era of Stanford football. And I'm seeing an opportunity for Oregon to run the table in the conference. I think Oregon can run the table. I think they can. I'm not saying they will. They can. But I also look around the country, and I think this is a weird year with coronavirus, no spring football, a lot of uncertainty, and I'm looking at the kinds of coaches nationally that I think will thrive, and Mario Cristobal is one of those guys I think will thrive under these conditions. I further think that Oregon physically is ahead of schedule, and I see Andy Avalos on the defensive side of the ball. He's got about a 2-year window maximum to be at Oregon. Joe Moorhead, I know he just moved here. He's just unpacking. But it's possible that Joe Moorhead is going to end up with a head coaching offer in 1 to 2 seasons. I kind of feel like this thing is built to get to the playoff this season or next season. That's how Oregon is built. Will they get there? Will they be able to finish games? Will they play not to lose like they did against Auburn a year ago in the opener? Will they fumble the ball away and the game away against and a Pac-12 opponent like they did against Stanford 2 years ago? I can't control those things. But as the analyst who's looking at, all of the data here, I am putting Oregon's target to make the playoff this season. Like, I'm not saying they will, but it's lining up for the Oregon Ducks. All right, leave it here. Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports, is coming up. I want you to stay tuned for this. If you want to join Team Canzano, you can do that by texting BFT to 484848. That's how you get the newsletter. That's how you get ticket giveaways. Join Team Canzano by texting BFT to 484848. I have not texted my wife about her hair today. That's not going to be an issue. Thank you to the many of you out there.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.